Blog Talk Radio.
I do not own the rights to this music.
Hit me!
This episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with Peter Proctor Jr. about the kickoff party event for the Paul Proctor 911 Resolution. Peter is stepping out to do something positive for his brother Paul, a community and civil rights activist who carried on for Dr. Sonny Herford, a civil rights pioneer in Huntsville, and his brother's son, Jaden. This Friday on September 7th, 2018 at 7 p.m., there will be a social kickoff party event for the Paul Proctor Foundation. Good afternoon, Mr. Proctor. How's it going?
Good afternoon, Marcus. Good to talk to you, bro. Good to talk to you.
Good to have you on, man. Tell us about, we're going to get to how cities and other places, communities do service, but could you tell us about the resolution? First let's talk about the foundation. What is your hopes for this foundation, and what can people do to help you?
Okay. My hopes for the foundation is to actually serve a dual role. The first role that we would like it to serve is, first of all, personally myself being an eyewitness of what really happened in the event of Paul Proctor's death, I was eyewitness along with another gentleman by the name of Danny Johnson, who was a first cousin of ours. And what happened, I wouldn't wish it on anybody's family. I witnessed gross negligence in the handling and the servicing of that call, of the 911 call in which that I made on behalf of my brother, in which that they staged over 30-some minutes on the side of the road and refused to come to the house for some reason or another. But nevertheless, it was like a dream to me. I really couldn't believe it was happening. But at the end of the day, you know, being in the shock at the time and looking now almost 2 years later, standing that they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they wrongfully served that call. So we want to make sure that the foundation will serve the purpose to bring about public awareness when it comes to 911 service calls. And one thing that comes to my memory is that when I was standing in the middle of the road in front of the house waving to them to come down to the house, I couldn't believe that here I was making a 911 call in which they knew the address and should have knowledge of the people who was calling was credible. To the point that they should have came directly to the house within those 2 or 3 minutes. For all of the questioning and all of the interrogation and all of the things that happened was unnecessary. And so it leads me to believe that there is a protocol that the African-American community don't know about, or people living in considered to be high-risk neighborhoods or what may have you. But for some reason or another, something has to happen. And I'm willing to say that this is not the first time that this has really happened at all.
That's what I was going to get to next, and I hope you weave this in there. Do you think certain communities are underserved or not served as well as other communities?
Most definitely. I guess until it happened to you, I guess you'd never ever think about it. But it happened to me, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that because it was in a black neighborhood, they refused to immediately make that service available to us. And unfortunately, a life, a contributing cause of Paul losing his life was a result of it. So, yes, it is underserved.
And another thing here is I also had talked to someone before who felt like, now, I don't know this. I guess you have to be on the inside to know this, is that sometimes they fail to completely map out minority neighborhoods, so that could cause a driver or someone sitting behind a desk to get it exactly right. And if that's part of the cause too, that's just simple and something mechanical that can be fixed. So what I'm saying is what I heard, that was something I haven't heard before, is that sometimes cities do not map out in a good way the minority neighborhoods.
Well, I don't know about the logistical side of rendering the service, but I can just say this, that a call of such that was made by me was something that I thought was to be a very common service. It shouldn't have been anything out of the extraordinary. Matter of fact, if you can come and pull down the road, and you know where the address is, and you just pull down the road and sit there, the biggest question that me and my family had was, why did you park on the side of the road and not come to the house? You know, that is the biggest question. And if anyone listened to the tape that I'm pretty sure I shared a copy with you, was that the mind-blowing thing was that Hemsey and the fire department was there on the roadside, and I did not see the police until over 30-some minutes later when they finally pulled down in front of the house and get out of the their vehicles, out of their service trucks, and they just nonchalantly began to just walk onto the property. And I asked the lady who was seemed to be the leading person which they hurry up and open, knock the door down, the window or something to go in because he may be dead by now. The first thing out of her mouth, Marcus, was this: "I'm going to call the police on you." Just like
what?
That. Those was her words to me, just like that, verbatim. "I'm going to call the police
wow.
on you." And you know what I said? I said, "Ma'am, if that's going to knock that door down." She was a white lady who was seemed to be the team leader. She was the first one approached me, said anything. She had the red radio on her shoulder. Matter of fact, after I said that, she reached over to her shoulder and she called the police. You know, and later after the fact that when we have walked around the house, being interrogated by them and doing a whole bunch of yada yada talk, as we say in the street, wasting another 5 or 10 minutes. But I'm gonna speed forward a little bit because I want people to kind of get a view of what's going on. And this is also in the report that we have, is that while they were on the inside, supposedly trying to revive Paul. They had rushed me out of the house, so I went and saw the police parked outside. And when I so I walked across the street and I asked the police officer, he was a white gentleman, and I asked him, I said, "Sir, lady from Hemsley called the police. Could you please tell me why was you called?" And he said that the code was there was a large crowd gathering.
What?
And he said, yes, he said it was a large crowd gathering. That's what it was, what brought him to the scene of the event. So he said, "I don't even know why they even called me." And I said, "Wow, because nobody was there." And that's what the shocker. So what happened, matter of fact, that is in the report, Mark, is that people will see that was in the report. So the bottom line is these are things that I have pointed out to be discriminatory. Number one, you
yeah.
staged. Number two, the first thing you said to an African-American gentleman who's trying to get medical attention to his brother, that you're going to call the police on him. Now, mind you.
Yeah,
if
lock
they
you up for
that,
trying to save your brother.
Right, and so I found it to be very offensive. I'm telling you straight up now, what could be unique about this case is that for the first time they went into an African American community and there was somebody there that was not suspected to be a drug dealer, a killer, a robber, or what may have you. Anything that they have in the back of their mind to assume. For this case, you had two upstanding individuals, one who, myself, who has just ran for the city council of Huntsville, Alabama, who actually met with the firemen. Another brother who have just replaced Dr. Sonny Hereford on the consent order for the Huntsville School Board. Two individuals, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they could not have suspected as doing anything wrong or to put themselves on the line to go to jail for fabricating a story. You know, so it was heartening to me. It was mind blowing, and a lot of people was just shocked that Paul was gone anyway, because Paul was a pretty healthy individual. What had happened was that they didn't know that I wasn't able to really share was how and what was the cause of death in my eyesight of what happened. You know, so that's why I'm bringing this to the forefront. And
so,
also,
so she did call the police and they showed up.
Yes, that's when the police
when they showed up, did they show up for the person in distress, or did they show up to try to check you?
This would happen. The police did not have to check me because I was not an irate person at all.
I'm saying if she's calling the police on you, and when the police get there, what I'm saying, I know they can't check you. What I'm saying is, what was the police's intentions when you first encountered them? We know she had called, or threatened to call.
Well,
so what was their intention when they approached you?
Let me tell you what was crazy about this. I don't know where the police was. Hemsley and the fire department was on the scene first, and the police did not show up until 30, 40 minutes later, and it came as a result of the lady calling the police on me. So also, when you look
now,
at
now, when
the,
you say the lady, you mean the dispatcher, right?
Well, not the dispatcher. We're talking about the Hemsley service provider.
Okay, they were from Hemsley or the fire department?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Hemsley seemed as though that they were the individuals who took lead. Mind you, when I made the 911 call, I specifically asked for the fire department to come because the door would have to be knocked down in order to get in because he was unable to get to the door. So that was the first thing off the bat. So the fire department, as far as I'm concerned, they dropped the ball. I don't know if they were following the lead of Hemsley or not, but just from the 8 minutes and 31 seconds of an edited and cut version of the tape, the 911 tape, it will blow your mind. And that was the first thing that I was able to get, because I said there were some things that was not normal. Marcus, did you not know that while we were waiting for them to come, that I'm on the phone and the dispatchers was telling me that Hemsley, the fire department, said that they can't see down there. Mind you, the exact words that I'm telling you is what they said to me. Hey, we cannot see down there. Can y'all turn on some lights? Do you have a car or something? Marcus, that is what was said to me. So my thing is that this thing right here was something that was off the chain and was not normal. And
what was that? I mean, was that scared to go down there in where it might not be lit very well? Is that scared to do your duties, or is that just killing and wasting time?
Look here, let me tell you something. They were killing and wasting time. Now at Evans, Paul's address, 2228 Evans Avenue, in front of his house is a street light. The street lights were working, okay? To me, they were finding excuses. And I'm gonna tell you something else. If you wanna kind of like take a bird's eye view of who was working that night. That night there was not one African American that was working with Hemsley or the fire department. The only African American I saw was a police officer who came later, who did take some information, this, that, and the other. But let me tell you, if they felt as though that they were in a life-threatening situation, why did they not call the police and have the police to be there ASAP? Because there is a person who's calling for emergency medical attention. You know, so I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this story right here would never go away with me, because I take it all the way to the heavens. You know, I'm not going to die with it. But I'm saying because it's something that I would never, ever wish on anyone. You know what I'm saying? When I'm standing outside of a window listening to my brother, and the only thing I could do is say, hey, I have to call 911 to get in because you can't get out. Or you can't get to the front to open the door. And unfortunately, his son was not with him that weekend. And he was there all alone. He had had surgery about 9 days prior to this particular event. I was with him earlier in the day, and other friends were there visiting with him. So he was great. It was all good. But it just when I got the call, the only word that I could hear that he told me is, hey, I do not feel well right now. Can you just get to me? I don't feel well, you know. And when I got to the house, he was still alive. He was able to just hold on. And I called 911, and they procrastinated the operator. To me, she was very incompetent and very unprofessional. There were some things that was said that we got on that tape that if you hear, it would still blow your mind. But the whole time, she lied about that they were there. They were there. They were coming in. I mean, when somebody hear it, they would know for themselves that there was not an all-out attempt to save his life from a standpoint of a providing medical, emergency medical attention or services to him. So that was the heartbreaking part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to tell you something else on the legal side of it. You know, yes, there was a case, but guess what? There was not an attorney in the city of Huntsville. Those who was in the city of Huntsville referred me out. And at the end of the day, all of them, findings was that the state of Alabama laws are not in favor for such a case such as this. And so they were led to believe that it was not in the best interest of their time to do that. But all of them made sure, well, I'm very sorry, and this is tragic, and we know that this is questionable, but from a legal standpoint, you know, we don't feel that it's going to be something that they were interested in. So that's one reason why that the resolution that we have put together have not been drafted by the city of Huntsville. It has been drafted personally by me, communicates everything that anybody would ever want to know and ask in regards to the cause of death from Paul. The evidence and everything that I have was provided to me from them. I had a lawyer who pursued to get the 911 tape. They refused to release 911 tape to the lawyer, and I had to go before the city council to get the 911 tape, and they gave me an edited version of the account, of the event. And I also have a chronological order of events that was provided to me by the attorney. So everything that I got was based upon anything that they were willing to give up to not show any fault on their part. You know, so that resolution reflects that, and we will be bringing that forth, and it will be archived in the Proctor Family Estate Archives and any other agency that want to legitimately know. Now, mind you, this is shocking too. And I'm glad you're allowing me to freely talk. I can kind of get it out of me. And,
man, this is bringing voices to power, baby. We're not worried about anything anybody got to say. But the person who's on the show, their voice is in power right now. And anybody's welcome to come on and say whatever they want to say. And it's just too bad if they're talking about your ass. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just want to get it out and to let people know that, yes, after the shock of Paul's death, after really getting over the nightmare and realizing that this is not a dream, this is factual, this has really happened, I was able, with the little strength I had, to actually go and research and try to get the city to do an investigation. And they gave me all of these promises and said that they're going to do this and that. Matter of fact, the very night that I requested the 911 tape, within 45 seconds, the council said, every department get with Mr. Proctor right now to see what we can do to resolve this. And from a professional and for not trying to make havoc or what may have you, I entrusted that the city would give our family closure. And they refused.
Okay, let me ask you this right here. It's okay, you got to trust the city, but let me ask you about who is your councilman over there? Who is your commissioner over there? What have you heard from your councilman in that district and your commissioner?
Well, I'm gonna be honest.
If the city of Huntsville told them, to get on it and talk to y'all and see how to resolve this issue, what has the person who is directly, now that's the city as a whole, saying that? What I'm saying is the people that are closest to that, like the people who are over the district, what have they done? I mean, if the city said resolve it, then it should have been your elected and community leaders that know about it come out and try to resolve it.
Well, let me share with you, and God is my witness, and I would never lie on anyone. I would never try to make somebody intentionally look bad. When I give an account of something, I give a clear.
I'm not
going to
make nobody look good either.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm gonna tell you, Paul's death comes shortly after the city council race, and it was gearing up for the runoff between Councilman Showers and Devin Keith. And Paul, who endorsed Devin Keith from the get go. Even I was running, but me and Paul had an understanding of hey, this is how I feel that we should roll with this because of what's going on. But he rolled 199% with Devin Keith, and I eventually went and endorsed Devin Keith for the runoff against Councilman Showers. But during the day of Paul's death, the morning of Paul's death, both Devin and Councilman Shaw did show up at my family's home to give their condolences and to say that they would look into and to make sure that something would happen in regards to what happened, because I couldn't tell everybody what had happened, but they were informed to know that there was something that went wrong in regards to the medical service providers the morning of Paul's death. So they were, to me, was giving their sales pitches on getting support, because, I do have a lot of people in Huntsville who I know that Paul know, and we're pretty good people. If nothing else, we're pretty good people. So I guess, they wanted the influence. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, Councilman Showers was defeated by Devin Keith. I did get a chance to talk with Devin about the issue, and Devin told me that he would probably have to recuse himself from it because of his relationship with Paul, which I found to be kind of like, well, it really doesn't matter if something is
wrong.
Listen,
Ryan, I'm going to tell you right now. Let's just stop. Let's just stop it right there. Now, this is my opinion.
Go ahead.
He may have changed. I don't know. But just when I hear this about he got to recuse himself, that's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard.
Well, check this out.
This is a matter of community. This ain't a matter of who you know that you did this and that in the election. This is a matter of how how city services are ran. This is right up his alley. He can't recuse from that. He can't go running to hide in the closet on that like he has done a lot of other issues. He got to come on with it because this is a matter of service.
Look here, Echo. You know and I know, and we got to be for real for this, is that this, no matter how smart you are, no matter how articulate you are, if you don't have the experience and you don't have the support and you're not proven, you cannot feel comfortable with saying, well, a issue as hot as this right here, how can I really deal with it? Because I didn't say anything.
The only way to deal with it, the only way to deal with it is to be real. That's the only way to deal with it. I don't care if you're brand new, fresh out the bag, be real.
Well, being real, having experience and dealing with a hostile political environment are two different things.
It don't matter when you're real, the environment. When you can shape the environment.
Well, I'm experienced, and believe it or not, you know, I laugh today. I really do laugh today that when I ran for city council, the politics were so heavy and the money was so spent systematically that the people who would vote for me was heavily swayed by the old deeds and work of Councilman Showers in the support of all the old preachers who was not ready for change, who even went against Devin Keith. I was all about a new representation, period. And I thought and I believe that Devin Keith was the future to set a foundation for to go forward in the city of Huntsville. But I did not get angry or mad because he did not have the mind or the will to battle that. But I felt that the city of Huntsville, along with Will Cover and everybody, would kind of respect Paul enough to say, hey, well, the best thing that can happen is that not allow this to happen again. But they hadn't even come back to me to even address why it happened, when it happened, and who was involved to the point. So they were legalistic about it. And the city attorney with the city of Huntsville is very shrewd. And he does his job well as far as suppressing information. And it seems like government trumps the people. We pay taxes, but we really don't get services. We really don't get anything that is favorable to us. We voted for cameras for the police officers.
Yeah, you only get the services you're willing to fight for.
Yeah,
and because if you're getting shitty services by police, the city, or, you know, judges or anybody, then we got to start voting them out. I don't want to cut you off right here because we're pushing for time. I want to play this 911 call, and then we'll come back and let you finish up. We need to do another show at like 3 o'clock if you're available.
We're trying to do another
because I want to get into the foundation. But first, everybody want to hear this 911 call. We'll be right back after this 911 call. And I'm gonna mute your mic and my mic until it's over.
Okay then.
So we cut
ambulance
down on
service,
background noise.
Ambulance service helps on the way. What's the location of your emergency?
2228 Evans Avenue, can't get in the house, so we probably need a fire department to break into the door.
All right, tell me exactly what happened.
Ma'am, I got an emergency call. My brother's in the house. He's sick. He can't get out the house. The doors are locked. He can't get in.
Okay. So he called you and said he was sick?
Yes, he's real
sick. Okay. Well, sir, the ambulance is coming and the fire department, okay? But talking to me is not going to slow him down. How old is your brother?
Okay. He's 55.
Okay. Is he awake?
Ma'am, he's unconscious, whatever. I just heard some sounds like he was, he can't get to the door. He had surgery the other day. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Are you hanging up on me?
No, I'm just sitting here waiting on the ambulance.
Okay, they're coming. So you don't have a key or any way to get in the house at all?
If I did, I wouldn't be calling
okay.
you now.
Well, can you see them through the window?
Only thing I can see is the light is on, but I was just hearing them a while ago. I'm not hearing anything now.
Okay. But you don't see anything through the window right now?
Oh, you still there? Wow. You're not saying nothing.
Okay.
Can't see, I can't hear nothing. But even the sounds I was hearing, I can't even hear that anymore.
All right. What kind of sounds was he making? Was he hollering? Like, okay.
No, he wasn't hollering. It's desperation, like trying to hold on.
Okay. Okay. What kind of surgery did he have?
He tore his patella, not his patella, his Achilles.
Achilles tendon. Okay.
Yeah.
So he had foot surgery?
Yeah. And how long had that been? It had been 2 minutes, 3 minutes? How long has it been?
No, sir. It's only been a minute.
Okay.
And how long ago was that? 2 days ago?
No, that was a week. It's been a week ago.
A week ago, okay.
Yeah, he called me in distress about, we've been here now for how long? He called me about maybe 25, 20 minutes ago in distress.
Okay. What exactly did he say to you?
He said he does not feel well. He does not feel well. He don't understand what's going on.
Okay.
But getting to know that he suffers from acid reflux, too.
Okay. All right, well, my ambulance is on Atkins now, so they're making the loop.
Get us in the door.
Yeah, they're going to have to break in the door. Down the way. That's crazy.
I'm in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I tried to call back, he didn't pick up.
Okay. Okay, they're on Evans now. Can somebody turn on a flashing hazard light on their car so we can spot your house real easy?
Yeah. You must be at the top of Evans.
I'm sorry?
They must be at the top of Evans.
Yeah, they came in off the parkway, so they came in off of Madaris and then turned onto Evans.
Turn on your hazard lights. Man, this is crazy. This is crazy, crazy, crazy. Come on down, come on down, come on down.
I told them to come all the way down to the end, and then you've got your flashing hazard lights on.
Yes. Boy, I hate this. Come on down. He just stopped way down there. Way down there. Danny, just got down there. Evidently, he waiting to see a flashing light. He just cruising on down. Just wasting time. This. I'm like, no fair. I can't talk to him. He can't see me. All I know is he just sees.
He's promised that he can see her. He's waiting.
And this is crazy. But yeah, you see him blinking now. Yeah. I think you see him blinking now.
Okay.
Okay. He's still creeping.
Well, my ambulance can't break in. The fire department has to break in.
Okay. Whatever.
Well, it's the law, sir. I'm sorry.
No problem, but I'm just telling you right now.
Plus, the fire department's got the right tools to break in the door.
2228, he's still cruising. Damn. That's a crazy door. You give them a physical address and they can't come to a physical address? And that's crazy. I gave him a damn physical address and he can't even come to a physical address. Come all the way to the top and it take him 5 minutes just to get here. I'm telling you, it's stupid. Right here.
Is the fire department there?
Fire department, both of them.
Okay.
Right here.
All right, they're going to take care of it, okay? Good luck.
Yeah, so there you have it. We got about, what you want to say, you got about 3 minutes to sum this up, but we come in right back at 3 o'clock.
Okay, we'll come back and sum it up. What I'm going to say is this. Number one, to the defense of and the support and love for Paul, Devin Keith did do a presentation at an event that he had for the district. So that was a kind gesture for him to do. But this thing is politically motivated and it's a hot ticket item for someone who may not want to put their careers on the line. And I could say a lot based upon the research and investigation that I've personally done behind the scenes of what's happening. So I might get a chance to share that a little later, but I want people to kind of like take – that was 8 minutes and 31 seconds, Marcus?
8 minutes and 36 seconds.
Okay. So there was a two-minute version that was out there that kind of get me confused too. But that was the original 911 tape that was sent by the city attorney of Huntsville, Alabama to me. So that
okay, was that the complete time?
No. If you go back and listen to that, I did have a sound recording engineer to do forensics on that. They did cut and edit that tape because it was like 30. That was more than 8 minutes. We were over like 30-some minutes. They didn't. I mean, when you look at the report, you'll see in 15 minutes they called the police off. I mean, they called. They said it wasn't even an emergency no more. I got that document.
Okay, we'll be back. Okay, we're going to be back at 3 o'clock. Everybody stay tuned in and watch the pages, the Facebook pages. We're going to put the link on there. We'll be back at 3 o'clock to finish this story up. This is only the beginning.
Thank you.
A Over my city.